When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
The Brad Jones Racing Rundown with Chris Westwood and Macaulay Jones.
All right, we have the BJR Rundown. We're at episode 6 for the 2024 season. We've just had AGP. We've got Brad Jones on for another episode, so he's going to give us his wisdom. I mean, I would say that off the gate, we didn't have the greatest of AGPs, so it'd be good to be able to sort of talk it through a little bit and, see what we want to look forward to in the near future of BJR and trying to improve a little bit.
Well, yeah, you know, if we talk about the Grand Prix, it was one of the most difficult race meetings I've ever had, I would say. We've struggled in qualifying. I don't think that's any secret, on and off for the last 6 months, but then to actually not move forward in the race with the cars is very frustrating. And so it's something that we've come away from that event and looked at a number of things. There's been a lot of meetings here at BJR. You know, the week we came home, I was in a meeting every afternoon trying to work through it to get some ideas about how we go forward. And, you know, it's frustrating. But it's frustrating for everyone, the guys that work on the car, the engineers, the drivers. So, you know, it's about getting a plan, working through it and getting on top of things. And I think that's where we're at. So I'm happy enough with the ideas we've got for direction. And the Grand Prix is a quirky sort of place.
Absolutely.
And so a little unusual and what you use there isn't necessarily the tool you use everywhere you go. But in saying that, we were very fast there last year. I felt that this year we weren't anywhere near that. And so, you know, we've got a bit of work to do. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely showed spots there that we had pace. We do have pace in the car, but the car is just very hard to drive and extract the lap time out. So at times you can get a lap out of it, but it's very inconsistent or unpredictable is probably a better word. You know, and I think, yeah, it's a testament to the guys. They're doing a really good job of dissecting it. They're, you know, taking the ego out of it. They're all trying to work as hard as they can together. And I think that's really important, you know, and you know, the mechanics have the engineers back and vice versa. It's a team effort. It's definitely not at all where we want to be. I mean, yeah, we honestly, almost every race, all four of our cars ended up in a line, no matter where we had started. And that's always a bit, you know, frustrating. We all clearly have the same sort of issues, which is good. It's not the, you know, it's not the greatest thing that we're all slow, but it's good that we all have the same issues so that we can really come together and figure that out. So, I mean, we've elected to do a test day with Jackson Evans as a rookie day. So they get an extra 2 days for their first season.
Three
days for the first season of being
first
in the championship.
Two seasons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. That's a Brad Jones rule.
I don't know about that. Yeah, thanks, Macca. Look, I think that clearly when we put the cars on the track, we were fast. Three cars in the top 10 in the first practice session. Andre was second fast in the second session. We were there or thereabouts. And then as the weekend went on, well, we got worse. And I think that's actually a very good point. We got worse, where the others didn't necessarily go any faster, but we didn't go as fast. So, you know, a lot of work to be done. One of the great things about our group is when the pressure's on like this, everyone understands and seems to be working together really well. And you know, we need to get to the bottom of it quickly and get it sorted out.
And I think there can be a pros and cons to having a four-car team. I mean, now BJR is the only four-car team in the championship. I would say some of the pros are we have four cars, we can try different directions. You've got more engineers in the group to be able to, you know, butt their heads together to try and figure out which ways you want to go. But also in a two-car team, you can be somewhat more aligned at times because there's a little less, you know, people in the room. So it's a good and bad thing in some ways. I mean, I think now at this point, it's a really good thing because we need all the information we can get. And so trying to get different theories on what's going on or new ideas at some point. And then you've got four people that can kind of attack a different group of information or data.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I get that a lot and I read from, you know, people that don't really know that it'd be better if I just focused on two cars. But the truth is, I think that the model we have actually works for us. Mm. You know, the amount of income that you generate through four cars and the ability that gives us to hire the amount of people we've got is definitely a positive for us. It took a long time to be able to grow into four cars. And I don't think running two cars would make us any more successful. So I get it. And you could easily point to that as one of the problems that we've got, but I don't think that's what the problem is.
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem.
No, so
it's actually probably a gain for us at this point. Like I said, it's you've got four cars that can do different directions, and you've got plenty of ideas being thrown into the hat from all engineers.
Well, we'll see. But you know, as I said, the four car thing for me generates enough people that we can. You know, we can do different things here, and that model works for us. There's no doubt we need to get our cars working better. Going to Taupo is going to be, Taupo is going to be very different to the Grand Prix. You know,
very different style of circuit.
You were just over there having a run around. I think almost every team has been over there and had a run around the circuit. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different type of circuit to the AGP. I mean, I think I love New Zealand tracks. I did some racing over there in 2013 where we pretty much raced once every weekend for 5 or 6 weeks in a row. And their tracks are really cool. They're kind of quite narrow. There's not a heap of passing spots, but to drive, they're really an enjoyable place to go to. Almost all of the tracks I went to, I really enjoyed. So, and Taupo was no different. I didn't get the chance to race there before, so it was really cool to be able to get some laps. We were driving in Stephen Richards' Toyota Camry over there, which was you know, as close as it could get to a supercar, really. I mean, they don't run on the same tire, and it's probably more like a Super 3 car, to be honest, where it's, you know, you're back to the diff in the rear end, and it rolls a lot more, and there's a bit more of a sidewall on the tire, but it's a cool joint. It's very tricky. There's a lot of patches of surface. They've resurfaced a couple of corners over the last couple of years, and the corners that they haven't done, you kind of wish they did, because it's very abrasive. Like, it is one of, you know, it's old school Perth almost before they resurfaced that, and that had amazing racing at Perth because the tire deg, you know, if you weren't, you know, kind to your tires at the start of the race, you paid a heavy price, and it's no different at Taupo. It just has some sprinkles of grip every couple of corners when they've resurfaced it. But, you know, I expect the racing is going to be difficult. I think the passing is very limited at that joint, and that's where I think the tire deg will be a huge benefit to the category, because, it's a pretty narrow track and there's not a whole lot of passing.
Well, and tire life, right, from what you guys said.
It's going to be massive.
Is it going to be pretty high? So you're going to do one qualifying lap, idle around, stop, and save it up for the race, and you know, that takes a bit of strategy away, right? So
definitely, but then it can add it in as well. I mean, when you've got a 200k race, which I think is about 60 laps, and you've got two CPS stops, and so that will be, I guess, a good thing for it. You might want to, you know, split it in thirds or run short, get in clear air early. So there'll be some sort of strategy involved, but it's going to be a little limited, yeah.
I can almost guarantee you won't be running short.
No, you won't want to run long on those tyres unless you've got really good tyre life. But I think clean air is definitely going to be an important thing. There's some like undulation in the track, which you don't really see on the footage. And so that racing quite close will be somewhat difficult at times.
Hmm.
For sure.
It's going to be the first time that we don't have a fuel drop. So that's going to be...
Yeah, that will be interesting. I mean, you probably have the opportunity to fuel save, which is one of my nemesis words to say in racing. Hate fuel saving, as we all do. But that's part of it. And you will, when you're in traffic, if you can't pass and you can't move, then you're going to feel safe, because why wouldn't you? You know, it's
you get that
at Bathurst a little bit as well.
I think at Taupo, it's not going to be such a big deal because you'll do four tyres. So I think the fuel thing will come more into line when we go somewhere where we only put two tyres on, or there's no deg. And then people, you know, we've gone from having a minimum drop to now people will run the gauntlet. And instead of not taking enough fuel out of your tank and getting a penalty, you might run out of fuel. So it's just sort of moving the deck chairs around.
Haven't seen that in a while.
Nah, I don't think it will liven the racing up at all. What it will do is it'll make it clear which cars have got the best fuel economy. And what I think is going to be interesting is, even though they've got lock maps in the engines, the manufacturers will be pushing to try, I think they'll be pushing, to try and make sure that they've got the most fuel-efficient cars.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you definitely would think that they're going to try and do that. I mean, I don't really actually know what the difference between the Ford and the Chevy engine
in
fuel burn is per lap. So,
well, from what I understand, it's, you know, there's a bigger difference between cars within the same team with the same brand than there is between GM and Ford.
Yeah, which is a funny one. I mean, different driving styles, I suppose, use more fuel. I mean, if you're a left foot breaker, we've had them in the past at BJR, and they were always fairly known to burn more fuel than a right foot breaker, which is always interesting. I mean, there's definitely been some notable paths of that. But I might take it back to AGP and chat about the racing. I mean, you're obviously watching it. I mean, you probably weren't wanting to watch it, but was some of the racing good over the whole weekend? Or
it's a funny place to watch races. I think that they tend to space out a little bit. Yeah. But for me, it was not so much the racing. I mean, I thought the racing was okay in the supercars, but being in tents and actually watching the race on television and with the data. And the information that we get back from the cars and the software was very different. And, you know, the tents gave us more room, really a little bit more room, I guess, than the garages. But it was definitely different. I thought the racing was okay. I think that, you know, we have got, there's a bit of work to be done for us to go back there for sure.
I think thing we missed the pit stops.
Yeah, not having pit stops, but I could even live with that. I mean, I thought the racing was all right.
I kind of like the old school soft and hard, or the super soft and the hard. It sort of, it really came with some strategy. I mean, I think it got to the point when they resurfaced it that the softs just ran for a lot longer than they probably expected, and so that made the delta. But, you know,
I thought the racing was good enough.
Yeah.
The thing that I found frustrating is the Formula 2 cars are in the garages.
Yeah,
they still push down to the Formula 1 pit area to do their pit stops. They don't utilize pit lane at all.
And they don't have spectators in the back to see the F2 as well. So it's like the benefit when we were in the pit lane. We could have spectators coming through to the back of the garages that we used. But then they closed off to the public for the F2 in the garages anyway. So the benefit for them using it wasn't...
The garages weren't terrible, but I've worked out of garages at the Grand Prix before. So, but I still think there's a lot of work to be done for us to go back there. One of the interesting thing was, wow, so many people were there. You know, it's crazy. It's funny. If I had a dollar for every meeting I've sat in at supercars or a board meeting or commission, and they've talked about how we attract new fans and how we change our racing around to make it more exciting, or whatever the case may be, here's the truth. The truth is, when we were at our peak, we were as popular as Formula One. When we first started doing the Adelaide race, we were dragging more people or the same amount of people in as a Grand Prix was. What they've done is, it's meant to be the purest form of motorsport. It's certainly not exciting to watch, but they've got a TV show. And they've become popular through that. Yeah. So there's a lot to be said about having a fantastic show that reflects your business, as opposed to chopping and changing with fuel drops and race length and all that stuff. Really doesn't seem to impact on our fan base. All you're doing is upsetting the people who are a little more traditional and understand our racing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't understand why we've gone from three races on a weekend and now we have a 200 on one day and a 200 on the other. We chop and change all that. If you look at Formula One, who've got the biggest amount of growth across the world, it's all about having a decent reality show that bolts onto your program.
Had some drama to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think people got excited when Max DNF'd.
Yeah, well...
that's not what you want to make a race exciting.
Australians tend to not love people that continually win.
Well, yeah. I mean, mind you, he does just drive away. It doesn't make the most... Yeah. Makes the...
But I thought it wasn't a bad weekend. Yeah. You know, the thing that got me most was, wow, I cannot believe how many people go to that event. Oh, it's staggering.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is. I mean, it is good that we are in front of that amount of people. You know, whether they're going to tune into the next couple of races, I don't know. I mean...
Well, our racing was the most exciting racing probably in any class that was there over the weekend. I mean, I didn't watch that much of the Porsche stuff, but certainly anything that I saw,
we were
very entertaining. And that's what it's all about with our stuff. Yeah. All our sponsors are there. It's a good opportunity to showcase what we can do in front of a new group of people. Yeah, and so that certainly wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. And we might take it back to New Zealand and we might go old school. And what's some of your best or worst memories from yourself racing or as a team owner? Mm. I mean, I could definitely guess the best one as a team owner. But, you know, why don't you chat about that?
First time I went to New Zealand was in 89. I was driving one of Brock's Sierras and we raced at Wellington on a street race. And what I remember about that was it was bumpy. There was manholes in the middle of the road and the road was really bowed. Correct. And you bounced wheel spun from one end of the straight to the other. And I think it was Brock, Radisich and me and Noski. And Noski was the only one that wasn't sick. There were all the rest of us sick. So there wasn't a great experience. But it was my first trip to New Zealand. Best experience would be winning the JR Trophy with Bridie. That was an amazing weekend. There was so much pressure on the team from within, not with anyone else. And it meant so much to Bridie and to me and the team to win that event. And, you know, that's probably one of my career highlights, certainly outside the car.
Yeah. Emotional for the whole team. Really.
Yeah, it was. You know, I remember you were on a pit board there at one stage because the radio broke down. But it was, I really liked the place. Oh, and it's the last place I ran a sprint round. So it was, you know, I'd only decided just before I jumped in the car that last race, I was done and I didn't tell anyone. I told my brother when we gridded up, I said, you know, he came to the window and I said to him, this is it, I'm done. But it is a great place for car racing. You know, the passion that those people have. You know, we have a lot of Kiwis, that work here over the years and drivers. You and I mean, you know, you went over and raced TRS there, but we've been over and had a look around and gone to the World Speedway over there. So it's not very far to go to watch some great racing. And, you know, I can remember us going and having a run around in one of Kenny Smith's car, but they had McLaren Can-Am cars there at a
day at Hampton Downs.
So. Yeah, it was like a state round of a race meeting. And he said at the end of the day, why don't you jump in the Formula 3 car and cut a couple laps? So I've got a lot of fond memories about going to New Zealand.
Yeah, it's cool to see that, you know, it's sold out. I mean, I thought I was a little hesitant as how it would go. Taupo's a lot further away from Auckland than Pukekohe was or even Hampton Downs, which was a potential for a little bit there. But, you know, it's going to be a really cool facility. I mean, I was there very recently and they've put up heaps of temporary grandstands. I mean, they're expecting a lot of people. I mean, I think they'll be maxed out, that's for sure, and it's going to be damn busy. And they are very passionate fans. I mean, it's probably, you know, one of the places where, like Pukekohe, you could go around the last corner there and the crowd would cheer almost every lap, you know. So that experience is quite cool for those guys as well. You know, it's nice that we're going back, for sure.
100%.
And that's it for your memories over there?
Well, I think so. I mean, I've got a lot of memories. Jonesy flipped me over there. I mean, that was... I remember that pretty clearly. I've had some really good experiences over there. I remember JB tried to nail a cameraman in one of our BA Falcons and bent up all the bonnet on the thing. He had a picture of his head.
Oh, that was the.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
On the was it a BA or?
It was, yeah.
And
I'm sure it was.
So
the cartoon drawing of him.
That's right. Yeah. So I think Stoney did the cartoon.
That's it. Yeah.
Drawing had his face on the bonnet. And he dragged the thing back to the pits, and his smile had turned into a frown.
So did yours, I bet.
Yeah. Well, that's very true.
Yeah. And I saw an article not too long ago about the Rogers are out of the race investment group, and there's some new buyers in. I mean, thought who better to explain it than probably you. I mean, you know the ins and outs of the business very well. So, you know, give us a bit of a brief rundown of how that works.
Well, the Rogers, actually, I'm pretty sure they were bought out around Christmas time, but it's only just come out. It's a funny thing. Lots of people are interested in it, but there's businessmen behind the business, and so they don't always flag exactly what's going on when it happens because it's their business. And so there's two boards in supercars. There's the race board, which is made up of predominantly the investors in the business, and then there's the supercars board, which has got some team owners and the same people that are on the race board. The race board looks after all the money, what they spend, just all the racing, and supercars board more is meant to look after the racing of and explain to them, because the guys who are on the race board are investors that don't necessarily understand motor racing. You know, it's a quirky business. So Rogers sold out to another investor, so Rogers get that money. That money doesn't come into the business. But what you're looking for with that board is smoothness, investors that are willing to invest more if they have to, or make the right decisions to help us grow the business, and for us to help them grow the business, because if the business grows, it's great for them. They make some money out of it, or more money out of it. If it grows the business, it's good for us. We'll do more races, you know. So and it's also, you know, you spend a little bit of time taking those guys on the journey with you, so they understand how the business works, because some parts of supercars is just like any normal business, but any sport, it can be a little bit, you know, quirky, as I said before.
Complexities to it.
That's right. And so explaining all that. So there's a bit going on with that, but, you know, it's a bit of a big news story, but really it was an old news story.
Yeah. I mean, it could probably, from the outside looking in at times, it looks like a crazy sport. It's very expensive. It's, you know, very volatile in the way of owning a race team even. You know, it's, you can have a lot of bills that are unexpected. If you blow an engine, that's on you, and you know, if there's any damage, obviously, you know, you've almost set up BJR to have a part of every trade, almost, you know, where you've got engineers, mechanics, we've got sub-assembly, we've got paint and panel, we've got some carbon work going on, fabrication, machining, and a laser cutter next door that, you know, you probably don't do a whole lot of laser cutting, but it's enough that you need a laser cutter. So
yeah, I mean, that's certainly how we structure the business, because for me, it's handy to be a one-stop shop. You can wind it up or back as you need to. And
you get your timelines of when you need to get things done.
Well, it increases your timeline. It helps you with your timelines, but also costs, you know, which is a big thing in this business. And the other side of that, getting back to the board, is those guys, the great thing about having investors within the business is they've usually got serious backing behind them, and as do these guys, and so, you know, they're willing to invest to the point where they're not necessarily making money at a particular time, so the business can grow, because ultimately somewhere down the line they'll get their money back and then some.
Yeah for sure. And did you want to, we'll cap some NASCAR stuff, I know we
sure we can we NASCAR. Both watched a bit of NASCAR on the weekend.
Yeah,
and they're racing at Richmond. And it was actually really interesting. I like the shorter tracks, and Martin Truex Jr. was looked like he was home and hosed, and
he led 210 laps or something, and
yeah, lap and a half to go. You know, Larson ended up getting bumped into, and out came the caution, and then Danny Hamlin was on the on the inside, on the restart, and there was a lot of conjecture about whether he went early or not. And Martin Truex, who's normally a pretty calm guy, was pretty agitated at the end, ran into Danny and felt like Danny jumped the start and then used him up in turn one. Now, I'm not sure how much he used him up in turn one, but he definitely jumped the start for me.
Yeah, I thought the turn one stuff was okay, but I think that there was definitely a bit of a jump going on. I mean, you could see Truex sort of drop back a little bit, like, you know, a couple of meters to then try and get like a bit of a run on him. And
do
I
you
think,
reckon? I'm absolutely. Not sure that's what was going on. I reckon Danny just went early.
No, I reckon he was trying to anticipate, Truex starting to creep up. You know, I listened to his podcast and he's like, I was looking in the mirror. He's going about a K faster than what I was, or a mile faster than what he was. And he said, if I don't go when I went, he said he would have just got more momentum on me and probably going around the outside. And so he said, I sort of anticipated. He said, I wasn't looking at the line. He said, I didn't think it was a problem. Obviously, he's not going to think it's a problem. But, you know, I think Truex sort of got a bit heated after that. That's for sure. He was
He lost it in the pits, didn't he? I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Danny was the first one out of the pits. That's why he had the pole position. And he would be angry with the whole thing, as would I or you or... You know, and you tend to run into people and fix them up when you're in that class.
Yeah, when you're that heated. I mean, those guys can get away with that kind of stuff, whether it's good or bad. Probably they err on the side of Biff than what we do. That's for sure.
But 100%.
Yeah, it was a pretty good race. I mean, I do think they struggle to race a little bit. I mean, they were single file for a little while. They get kind of within half a second and they kind of just stall out, it seems. You know, even like the lap guys, they couldn't quite get past the lap guys, and that was holding everyone up. But they have done a good job of like compressing the field this new gen
car. One of the interesting things that I didn't understand, because, you know, when Shane was going down there, he was talking so much about how they, you know, they have the ability to do whatever they want. But all the GM teams, all the Toyota teams and all the Ford teams pretty much come up with a setup on the sim, and they all go with that setup, and then you're not allowed to change as much as a spring. You just unless you want to go to the back. So whatever you turn up with is what you race with, which is, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, there's not that much passing. Like, we don't have that much at the moment because everyone's got the same stuff.
Yeah,
so, I find the whole thing quite interesting, but whatever the Gibbs have got going on for short track racing, man, they're hooked up. Their tire life is crazy. And when you're looking at Bristol, I mean, that's proper racing, isn't it? They keep their drivers out there until they blow tires and then they stop. Yeah. Like, I wasn't listening to the radios, but I bet they were squealing like crazy.
Yeah, they definitely were. I mean, it was really good racing, though, and I think they all kind of, after that event, we're calling for more of it. You know, they won.
I didn't see a tire come off a car that didn't have cords hanging out of it.
It's pretty crazy. Cool. Well, mind you, I don't know about the leaders there. They seem to be hanging on all right.
Yeah.
I mean, if your car was set up all right, it seemed like they would hold on to their tires well. But man, it went off a cliff, a few guys.
Well, at Bristol, it looked like there was only two cars or three cars that were set up, and all the rest of them were in another race.
Yeah, the Joe Gibbs cars are fast. I mean, and then they had Coda as well, and I find Coda very funny to watch, as, like, you know, obviously we're in circuit racing pretty heavily over here, and then you watch their track limits, and then they start penalising two corners for track limits, and you're like, hold on, how about the rest of it? But I totally understand why they do it.
It's an S, and they would have driven straight through it. I mean,
but they half already do.
Well, they do, and if you look at a couple of corners from the last corner, they're inside the curb.
Yeah.
So the whole car is, they're dropping two wheels on the dirt, but they're not even driving on the racetrack. You know, I find it staggering.
But on the
I was interested to hear Shane talk about that, where he's like, you know, they're overrunning the corners so much that the skill, to a certain extent, gets negated because they just, you know,
there's no limit. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you can definitely see that from watching it, it's.
Did you enjoy Coda? I thought it was okay, but.
Yeah, look, I mean, there was parts where it was pretty boring, but, you know, I quite liked you know, Christopher Bell chasing down Byron. And then, you know, I thought it was odd that there was no team orders at all when Ty Gibbs was in front of Chris Bell, and they didn't race hard, but it wasn't like, hey, move over, I'm a second faster. Mm-hmm. It was, he sort of held him up for enough that I thought, that's odd. But I guess he's also racing his own championship. Yeah. So, you know, I totally understand that at that point, but, you know, I would say that would be different in this situation. You know, in BJR.
Yeah.
If you're a second faster a lap and you have a chance to win.
And if any one of the cars got a chance to win,
yeah,
you'd be helping them.
Yeah. So I thought that was a little bit odd, but I kind of like their road circuits, to be honest. I like their different style of racing. They're bumping and running, or, you know, those cars are look very odd to drive on that type of race. So, you know, they've got to really think about what they want to do if they're not, you know, if they're a similar pace.
Yeah, I think that their cars are very different to what they used to race. Definitely. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, that's probably enough NASCAR. I think we'll wrap it up.
No problem.
Anything
at all
else you want to add on to?
No, I think that's it, Macca.
Just excited for Taupo.
I am actually excited for Taupo. I like going to New Zealand, and I'm hoping we're going to turn around our performance and get a result there. So I'm really looking forward to getting down there.
Yeah, me too. All I across. Mean, I think Andre wasn't too stoked that everyone was getting laps there. He would have been one of the only drivers to have really raced a whole lot there. You know, he's done some of the NZV8s, the Super Tours there, and so he was pretty fast there. He seemed to really enjoy that joint. Bit of track knowledge always helps.
Good.
It is good for us, for sure. But anyway, yeah, thanks for listening. It's BJR Rundown, and bring on Taupo.
Thanks, Micah.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for the support. Make sure you subscribe to the Motorsport Podcast Network. We're going to be dropping a new episode every second Thursday.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years, from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.